By the way, I have nothing to disclose. It's always a little embarrassing that I have nothing to disclose. I wish I had a more complicated life, something to disclose. But this is part of the same project, and which some others in the room are familiar with, where we've interviewed a number of stakeholders to examine the feasibility of HIV rapid testing in the dental care setting. And in this case, this is a study where we talk to executives at dental insurance plans, and this is joint work with Rebecca. Actually, conducted the great majority of the interviews that I'll be reporting on, and it's part of a larger project that Lisa Metch is the principal investigator of, which is funded through NIDCR. Okay. So we need more university logos. You can see we have a number of people that helped us. In particular, the National Alliance of Dental Plans was incredibly helpful for this section of the project, and we're really very grateful for what they've done to help us. So, as has been mentioned, sort of the jumping off point of this project really comes from the 2006 CDC guidelines, which advised the routine use of rapid screening of adults in a variety of outpatient healthcare settings. And in all but the lowest prevalence populations, it turns out that HIV screening is cost-effective when evaluated by the usual benchmarks and cost-utility analysis. The dental setting is a potentially valuable site to do this, although there are a number of barriers to actually implementing that. So, and Rebecca just mentioned some. So here is a rapid test, and one of the nice things about the rapid test is that you could actually just do an oral swab, and then it takes about 20 minutes. You could do the rest of the dental visit, and then you'd have a result by the end. And a variety of professionals and paraprofessionals could conduct the rapid test. So, from a technological point of view, it's promising, and actually, it does the not requiring the blood draw is a particular virtue for some care settings. Now, dental care is a broader set of issues, which has already been mentioned on the panel. Dental care is increasingly recognized as an opportunity to serve individuals who have health risks who may not otherwise access medical and public health systems. And HIV testing in the dental care setting is at least consistent with a movement towards a full integration of oral health within the primary care team. Dental providers are also well positioned to notice oral signs and symptoms of HIV/AIDS while conducting oral exams and so on. I think it's pretty familiar in this audience. Rebecca mentions an article that I published with Lisa Metch and Stephen Abel 2 years ago, where we used the National Health Interview Survey to look at adults who self-reported that they were engaging in HIV risks and had not been tested. And it turned out that 70% had actually had recent contact with a dental provider. And which is interesting. In fact, we found that if I could back up for 1 second, we found that a lot of people had no contact with any other medical provider, but had still had a contact with a dentist. And if you sort of think about a 24-year-old, basically healthy man who's engaged in some HIV risk behaviors, you know, this guy's not going to the doctor, but they will go to the dentist, get their teeth cleaned, whatever. So there is an opportunity there. So now let's move to our qualitative interviews. Which is mostly Rebecca, conducted 14 semi-structured telephone interviews with executives who were recruited from the clinical work group of the National Association of Dental Plans. And they were asked about general attitudes towards the role of dental providers, their firm's current reimbursement policies, and factors that influence their reimbursement. And I think it's important in public health to actually go and talk to insurers and get a sense of, well, how do they think about some of these public health screening and testing activities. Now, we only talked to 14 people. You might say, well, that seems like a pretty small sample. Well, it turns out that these firms that we talked to covered 54% of the United States' total market share for dental plans. So we talked to a number of very large firms that included Medicare and Medicaid plans, private plans across the whole country. We had quite a diversity of plans. We also asked them about tobacco cessation and some other things. And one reason we asked them about tobacco was that's the kind of paradigmatic preventive service that a lot of people in the dental profession and in dental insurance are talking about as an area where dentists could be more active. Okay. So I'll say a few things about the tobacco cessation. Four insurers are currently reimbursing tobacco cessation risk and assessment as part of a well visit, and three are participating in pilot programs to reimburse tobacco cessation as an individual billable service. And we published one article from this project on that. All the people we spoke to agreed that tobacco use is very relevant for dental practice, and the overall view, there was a growing appreciation for the connection between oral and systemic health, particularly when it came to smoking. And so here we have, I won't dramatically read it aloud to you at this hour of the afternoon, but this is a pretty typical quote, that tobacco is a hazard from all perspectives, and it's something which is important, is that tobacco has an oral health implication that's very immediate. And so there's very strong reasons to get involved in tobacco cessation. Now we get to HIV screening. Slightly different story. Zero insurers are currently reimbursing for HIV screening. And in fact, the number that are contemplating that would be about zero also. And actually, they were generally supportive of the idea. It's actually talking to them, you get it's a great example of why it's useful to think about behavior change. Almost everyone that we spoke to, if you say, is HIV testing and screening important, they say, yeah, somebody should really do that. That's really valuable. It's really great when people, well, of course, we shouldn't be the people paying for that, but somebody should do that. That'd be great. And none of the firms had any kind of operational discussions about reimbursement. It's very different from tobacco, where they were actually really investigating in a practical way, how could we do this, what would it cost, and so on. So about half of the respondents were generally supportive of the idea once it was raised. The other half were very concerned, and they raised a number of barriers, which included discomfort by both dentists and patients. For example, how to handle a positive HIV test. So let me say a few things about barriers. This is a group, these are firms that care a lot about... do I have 2 minutes left? Is that right?
No. I'm trying to get the mic.
Can you hear me? Are you guys all hear me? Okay. Maybe too well?
I think the mic is falling.
These are firms that have a very bottom line perspective. They value public health. They value providing good care. But they're profit making firms, and they say it comes down to the bottom line, it's how much time is this going to take? What will it yield? Has it got real value? One thing about HIV screening was the unclear relationship to core dental competencies and mission. Everyone acknowledged that HIV was an incredibly important public health issue, but its specific connection to dentistry was a different question. And from the point of view of a dental insurer, that's really important. If it's not something that, there are lots of things that dentists could do. And when we talked to dental insurers, they said, yeah, it'd be great if the dentist did that, and they should build a medical plan for it, if it's a medical thing. If it's not a dental, you could do a hypertension screen, you could do all sorts of things, and that's great, and the medical insurer should pay for that. We're dental insurers. We pay for activities that are core dental things. There was also a barrier that came from perceived reluctance among dentists to do that. And we actually interviewed dentists. It's not clear. I should say this is the perception of the insurer. It's not clear that this captures the mentality of the actual dentist. But they were concerned that dentists weren't ready for it, that they're not confident, that dentists would not be confident when it comes to discussing issues outside of just teeth and gums. And it took even a lot to bring them up when it came to tobacco cessation. So from the point of view of the dental insurers, there was a questioning of that. And there's also a sense, we're overloading potentially the dental care setting with lots of different tests and procedures and questions and health forms. And if this isn't really core to what dentists are doing, is this really something that we want to be pushing our dentists to do and to reimburse? Does that, folks, make sense? Is that, I'm looking out, you have that look of 4 o'clock on a Monday afternoon.
It's not 4 o'clock yet. We're okay.
If you need to stand up and do Tai Chi, just let me know. The other thing is,
we're going to have a great discussion. discussion another day, I promise.
The other thing is weak employer demand. You know, if you say, who is the customer for these firms? It's employers. And one of the things, that when they talked about tobacco, one of the things they said was, the firms that hire us care a lot about smoking. They ask us about smoking. You know, they want all their employees to not smoke. So if we can contribute to that, it's a great business opportunity for us to add value that our customers would appreciate. No one's asking us about HIV. So weak employer demand is another barrier that, you know, this is not going to come from employers wanting it to happen. Some of the same opportunities that Rebecca mentioned. One is employers want to see randomized trials that are tuned to the dental setting. If the dental profession demanded it and there was an evidence base for it, you could start to make a sales pitch for it. Also, the idea that Medicaid and public health dentistry may be a better avenue in than some of the private insurers. And also the public health dentistry organizational environment may be easier to do the testing, and maybe, you know, if you have a positive test, it's easier to see how that could be addressed. There are a variety of other preventive services that are coming along in the dental setting, and it's pretty clear from the surveys that we did. Insurers will not lead in these efforts, but they will follow if dentists, patients, and employers highly value those services. I'll just end with, you know, we are pursuing many of these questions with our broader project. We're surveying dentists. We've talked to patients, a whole range of stakeholders, and we hope to be able to come back and give more results. But there's no question that the siloing of dental care is a significant public health failure in American public health policy. And I'll just say thank you and stop talking.